So, Boker Tov, we're here, Yom Ha'atzma'ut, Tufshin Pei 2020, studying the following topic. Is the Israeli flag a religious symbol? Is it a Jewish symbol? And we're going to study the curious history of the Israeli flag. Now, what I've done is I've actually created a, this is an opportunity to be a little creative in the media that we use, and I decided to do a PDF. Okay, so can everybody see this the screen? Okay, I just put this on the screen, and we're I'm just going to move this over a little bit so we could see a full screen. Tov, does everybody see the screen? Yeah? Can everybody see? Fantastic. Good. Okay. Good. So let's begin. Is the Israeli flag a Jewish symbol? The curious history of the Israeli flag. So first of all, let's notice here that this is 1948, of course, Ben Gurion establishing the State of Israel. He's got a picture of Theodore Herzl right above him. And notice what you have to the right of him, you have an Israeli flag. Okay, so we already see that from the beginning of the State of Israel, the Israeli flag was known. So we have to dig back a little bit further and try to figure out how this flag was established as the official flag. And why this flag was chosen as the official flag. So we move on to the next source, and we'll notice that when Theodore Herzl, I'm just going to ask everybody to mute themselves. I mean, okay, please mute yourself. One second. I'm gonna mute everybody. Unless you have, if you have something to say, feel free to say something, to raise your hand or to unmute yourself and to talk. But otherwise, please stay muted. So the So Theodore Herzl in 1896, he writes to Baron Hirsch. He's trying to get Baron Hirsch to help support purchasing perhaps the land of Israel from the Ottoman Sultan. And Herzl has his vision, the Jewish state. And in the Jewish state, he actually has one of his journals. He has what he believes should be the future flag of the Jewish people. Now, what is the need for a flag? And he writes here very passionately to Baron Hirsch, Dego maze, klonus umatlit arid. You think this is just a woven piece of cloth? Lo aduni, degel hu lemala mize, bedegel molechim bnei adam asher otzim. A degel, a flag, actually plays a very important part in our lives. A flag leads us, v'afilu la'eret ha'yuda, can lead us to our land. People die, people live and die for a flag. A flag represents the values that we hold dear, that we live for, that we die for. If you teach people about nationalism, you teach them about caring about the state and their people and their future destiny. So a flag symbolizes all of these things. Now, notice what Herzl's flag looks like. Okay, anything similar to our Israeli flag? Well, yes. You have the six-pointed Magen David in the middle there. But you also have a seven star right up above. What is the meaning of Herzl's flag? So he explains as follows. The white represents our nation, the purity of our nation, the rebirth of our nation in its land. The seven stars represent the seven work days, the 7 hours of work during the day. Okay, so this, again, this is a socialist vision, work, 7 hours. That was their what he believed to be the ideal, time that you work in a day. So 7 stars represent that very non-Jewish, the 7 work hours. Not that we don't value work, but Yemein Kemach in Torah. But this whole socialist vision inserted into the flag. Now, we clearly did not adopt this as the flag of Medinat Yisrael. However, Herzl's 7 stars are prominently featured in the emblems of Tel Aviv and the city of Herzliya. So let's go to the next. Thing. Now, what is the basis of a flag in Tanakh? Does it have any Jewish origin? And the answer is that it does. In Sefer Bamidbar, we read about Ish al diglo ve'otot leveit avotam yachanu b'nei Yisrael. The Jewish people were camped in the Midbar and traveled, and a degel is what taught them. Degel can play a number of roles. First of all, you could see where the leader is. A person with a flag, you follow after him. A degel can also be a sign of group identity. And in this case, you had the different Shvatim, Shimon, Levi, Yehuda, all had their different flags. And this symbolized the unique identity of each of the tribes. The Midrash Tanchuma takes us a little bit further, and it tells us, Chiba gedola chibei v'hakadosh baruch hu et Yisrael. Hashem showed tremendous love for us. Ki asa'an digalim, he made us flags, kemalachai asharei, just like the angels. Kedei sheyu nikarim, b'nei Reuven la'atzman, u'b'nei Shimon la'atzman. A flag gives us identity. It gives us a spirit. It gives us a unique character. And you put whatever it is that's on your flag, that represents what you value most. That symbolizes in a very sort of succinct and clear way what it is that you stand for, what it is that you value. That's what a flag is supposed to. It also had its colors, it is imagery. It's supposed to evoke feelings. Okay, that is the purpose of a flag. And Hashem gave us flags just like the Malachi Asherei to show his love for us. Now, so how did we get to the current flag that we have today? So the story begins with someone by the name of David Wolfson. Okay, David Wolfson, who was one of the leaders of the early Zionist movement. You see a picture here of him on the right. He grew up in a traditional home, a very religious home. His father was a Talmid Chacham, but he ends up joining the Zionist movement, and he accompanied Theodor Herzl on his travels to Palestine and Istanbul. Wolfson was elected as the vice president of the Zionist organization, the World Zionist Congress of 1905. And in 1907, after Herzl dies, actually Herzl dies in 1904, but he becomes president in 1907. And here's the story. This is the official legend of how we got to the flag of Medinat Yisrael today. But we're going to see that the story has some holes in it. At the behest of our leader Herzl, I came to Basel. Basel, Switzerland is where the Zionist Congress held their first meeting in 1897 to make preparations for the Zionist Congress. Among many other problems that occupied me then was which contained something of the essence of the Jewish problem. What flag would we hang in the Congress hall? Apparently, it was the day before the Congress, and they still had no idea about which flag they were going to use. And then Wolfson tells us he had an epiphany. He had a nevuah. Then an idea struck me. We have a flag, and it is blue and white, the talit, the prayer shawl, with which we wrap ourselves when we pray. That is our symbol. Let us take this talit from its bag and unroll it before the eyes of Israel and the eyes of all nations. So Wolfson clearly has a religious identity. So I ordered a blue and white flag with a shield of David painted upon it. That is how the national flag that flew over the Congress Hall came into being. Wow, what a story. And we're connecting now Medinat Yisrael with the talit, and we're going to study the meaning of the talit in just a second. But this is the story, at least as told by David Wolfson in his memoirs. Okay. However, there's a little bit more to the story, because the blue and white flag actually had resonance. Blue and white as colors actually existed long before David Wolfson suggested that we just, you know, take it from the talit. And I'm going to share with you an example from someone by the name of Ludwig Frankl, who was a Jew who went to visit Eretz Yisrael in, I think it was 1856, and he wrote a poem called Judah's Colors. Okay, and this is what he writes. When sublime feelings his heart fill, he is mantled in the colors of his country. He stands in prayer wrapped in a sparkling robe of white. The hems of the white robe are crowned with broad stripes of blue, like the robe of the high priest. Adorned with bands of blue threads, these are the colors of the beloved country. Blue and white are the borders of Judah. White is the radiance of the priesthood, and blue the splendors of the firmament. So it seems like this idea of blue and white, which he's connecting here to the kuhuna, the priesthood, he's also connecting it to the firmament, the rakia. White, okay, he also associates white with the priesthood. The kohani would wear white, of course. So we see that David Wolfson's story is now, there's some holes in it, because we're seeing that the blue and white connected with Israel, Yehuda, precedes Wolfson by 40 years. So let's move on here. And just to show you how, again, this proves, but that these were colors associated with Israel before Wolfson, we have here Alfred Jelinek, a Reform rabbi, an ardent anti-Zionist. So he bringing him here, not because we agree with his ideas in any way, shape, or form, but he writes, and this is in 1896, he's writing here. You could just see how ridiculous his views are. Jews are not of any national characteristics as such, but thanks to their universalism, they adapt and absorb qualities from the nations in whose midst they were born and educated. You have to remember, Reform Jews were anti-Zionists early on. Today, in the 1930s, they became more Zionistic. Today, they're mostly Zionistic, with as a movement, although there are individuals who might not be. But we are at home in Europe. But listen to these words. We are at home in Europe and regard ourselves as children of the land in which we were born and raised, whose languages we speak and whose cultures make up our intellectual substance. We are Germans, Frenchmen, Magyars, Italians, and so forth with every fiber of our being. And then he writes here, we have to reject, deny, undermine any attempt to create a national project to return to our land. And we're against this blue and white flag. He's writing in the 1890s. This is before 1880s, 1890s, but this is before David Wolfson says, oh, we should have a blue and white flag for Medinat Yisrael. Now, what happens, though, is we continue with, so David Wolfson, the flag, he does play a part in the story. And that is the flag that they did indeed fly over the Zionist Congress in 1896. And for the next 50 years, essentially, that is the flag that's adopted by the Zionist movement. And you saw that Ben-Gurion, we had the flag in 1948 draped in Tel Aviv. But after the establishment of the state, the government said, well, let's now officially create a flag. And so they actually have, look at this on the left side, Medinat Yisrael HaMemshela Hazmanit. They made a hazmana. They had an invitation. They made a contest, and they asked, they invited people to share drawings, ideas for the future colors. Okay, now these are the facts. Hadnitunim, the degel needs to be blue and white. Techeilat vilavan. Beguf ha-degel magin David o shiva kochavim. Zahav o tzeva acher. And so there are certain features that you had that had to be in the flag, but they opened it to different options. Okay, and people could given options and given their own artistic designs. And indeed, we see some artistic designs here. Okay, you have the blue and white. Some of them have seven stars. You have something that looks a little bit like the flag of America here. You have here signs of the socialist movement, the boats bringing people to Israel, the hard work. We have olive branches. So we have different things here, different symbols that were suggested. But what wins out? Ultimately, one wins out. And here we have the official chok. Hitkabel b'mo'atzad ha-medina hazmanit. Okay, we have this also we have the official flag is adopted for Medinat Yisrael, hareka, lavan ve'alav shnei pasei techelet kehei. There's white with two stripes of blue, 25 centimeters apart, etc., etc. And a Magen David with six different points in it. Okay, and this is the Provisional Council of Flag Proclamation of the State of Israel. You can see this in English here. And this was adopted on the 28th of October, 1948, Kaf Hebe Tishrei. And this is what the government decided upon. And this is the flag that we have today. But here we get to the following discussion. What is it that we think about this flag from a religious standpoint? What is the value of this flag? Is this flag just a socialist or a Zionist or even national symbol? Is there a deeper religious significance specifically to the Israeli flag? Okay, so now we jump in to hear what some thinkers think about this. So we start with Rav Kook. Rav Kook spoke to the, had a very interesting talk that he gave in 1926, at the Churva Synagogue. The Churva Synagogue is one of the oldest Bate Knesset in the Ir Atika. It has recently been rebuilt. It's beautiful. It's the huge dome. It's the largest structure in the Jewish part of the Old City, in the Jewish quarter. But this was a structure that was destroyed in 1947, 1948, during when the Jordanians when they shot at and you know, were shooting missiles at the and bombs at the old city, and to over to in order to conquer it. And but in 1925, the Chorva Synagogue was being rededicated. It's associated with Rabbi Yehuda Chassid, also with the Ramban. And Rav Kook gave a speech, a very interesting speech, okay, in which he, flow down to go to the bottom here, but he talks about the value of a flag. But he's not talking about the flag of Medinat Yisrael. Medinat Yisrael was not in existence then. He's talking about the flag of the Jewish Legion, okay? Now, and here we have, if I'm not mistaken, this is the flag here, HaGedud HaIvri, Rishon LeYehuda. You can see it on the bottom left. What was the Jewish Legion? Can anybody tell me what the Jewish Legion was? Anybody know? Okay, I mean, you could unmute yourself. Tell me what was the Jewish Legion? Can anybody tell me? Okay, I'm gonna mute everybody, and then you can unmute yourself when if you have something to share. Yes, who could share with me what was the Jewish Legion?
Jabotinsky founded it in World War I to help support the British war effort against the Ottomans.
Yeah, excellent. Vladimir Jabotinsky, ardent, passionate leader of revisionist Zionism, he starts the Jewish Legion in order to help the British in 1918 fight against the Ottomans. Okay? And so it started by Jabotinsky. Why did Jabotinsky do this?
He wanted to form the nucleus of a Jewish defense force for the later state.
Yeah, excellent, Ari. He felt if we start building it, first of all, the British will like us and they will support our efforts when we want to build our own state. But he thought that this would be the Garin, this would be the nucleus of a future Jewish army. And who was a very famous soldier who died fighting in the Jewish Legion?
Trumpledor,
Yafe Mo'od. This was in Tel Chai. And we are blessed to live on Rehov Tel Chai. So we think about Joseph Trumpledor. Now, they had what happened ultimately was that the Jewish Legion was disbanded and retired after World War I. And Rav Kook is speaking to those who participated in the Jewish Legion. And he gives a very stirring speech in which he talks about, okay, now I have here a list of some of the things he says in his speech. This is all collated by someone by the name of Rabbi Ari Shvat. Okay, Rabbi Ari Shvat, it was actually, I'll tell you a good story about Rabbi Ari Shvat. He wrote a book called Raise the Flag, about the history of the flag in Medinat Yisrael. And he found this speech that Rav Kook gave at the Chorva Synagogue, which had never been found before. He unearthed it. Now, Rav Ari Shvat, when I came to Israel after 10th grade on a program with Bnei Akiva called Machach Ba'aretz, we went to study, and I picked a learning track. So we went to study in Yeshivat Tagolan and in Chispin, and we studied in Yeshivat Haratzion in the Gush, and Rav Ari Shvat was our teacher in Chispin. And he is an ardent, ardent religious Zionist. And we had a kumzitz with him. We learned with him every single day. It was an unbelievable experience. And this is the song that he taught us. He was an American Ole. He taught us this song. Goodbye, America. Goodbye, assimilation. We're going on Aliyah to build a Jewish nation. Goodbye, America. Shalom, shalom. Children of Israel, our father wants us home. So maybe we'll bring him to Shifte to speak. So he just shares a summary here of some of the things that Rav Kook associated with the flag. Again, this is the flag of the Jewish Legion. He speaks about, he mentions that there's certain holiness to this. The flag represents Hashifa al-Umit, national aspirations. The flag represents the eternity of the Jewish people. The flag represents Kibbutz Galiot, V'san Neis. Let's raise a flag, L'kabetz Galiotenu, from the four corners of the world. The flag represents Kivush Eretz Yisrael, conquering the land. It represents those who are, etc. So the Gvura, the Jewish people, etc. So the flag, this is the Jewish Legion. This is not the flag of the Jewish, of Medinat Yisrael today. And we even have a picture of, we have a picture of Rav Kook. This is the only picture we know of. Rav Kook is here in the middle with the flag of Medinat Yisrael, which was to be Medinat Yisrael, behind him. You had the American flags here, you had the flag of Medinat Yisrael, and this is a picture of Rav Kook in the middle. So this is Rav Kook's view of the of the Israeli flag. And now we move on to Rav Joseph Soloveitchik. Now Rav Soloveitchik came from the most ardently anti-Zionist family in Lithuania. Okay, this is the Soloveitchik British, Brisker family. And yet Rav Soloveitchik broke with his family and broke with Haredi, the general view of the Haredi Gedolim. He became the head of Mizrahi. He became an ardent Zionist. And he has a sefer called the Chamesh Drashot, five different drashot, five sermons that he gave, many of them related to Am Yisrael, Medinat Yisrael. And he's asked about the value of the Israeli flag. Now, it's important to understand Rav Soloveitchik is a halachist, and everything needs to be viewed through the lens of halacha. If something doesn't have value in halacha, he doesn't value it. So he's asked this question, and he gives a very creative answer. He says, "Im tishaluni ech ani ki yudi talmudi, how I'm a Talmudic Jew, mabit al degel medinat Yisrael, how do I look at the degel of medinat Yisrael, im yesh lo bichlal erech hilchati, is there a religious value to it? Ene lechem pashut, I will answer you simply. I don't value any of these flags and symbols. This is narishkeit. This stuff is all foolish, national pride. I don't buy into this. Judaism negates, rejects all these national symbols and these types of things. But let us not forget a halacha in the Shulchan Aruch, also quoted in the Shach, ki harog shenerag bide'akum. Listen to the halacha that the Rav Soloveitchik mentions. There's this notion, quoted in the Shulchan Aruch and the Shach, that if a Jew is killed or murdered in cold blood out of anti-Semitism or because he is a Jew, so the question is, how do we bury this person? So the answer is, we don't do a tahara. We don't put on a talit, a clean talit. What do? We bury him in his clothing, the way that he's been killed and murdered, with his blood and with his begadim. Why? I hear some planes outside. I don't know if you could see them, but we definitely hear the planes outside. Baruch Hashem, thank you for Tzva Hagana Yisrael and Anshei Kochot HaBitachon and the Air Force. And Rav Soloveitchik says, so why do we do this? We do this so that we witness, so that we remember the cold blood in which a Jew is killed in. B'milim acherot, b'gdei Yehudi mekablim kedusha mesuyemet kesheim muktamim b'dam kadosh. A Jewish clothing receives holiness. Okay, they're imbued, they become inherently kadosh when a Jew is killed because he's a Jew. What about the kachov levan? Shetibul b'damam shalfei tzrim yehudim tatim lo tatim shenaflu b'melchemet hashechur b'agadatam la'aretz v'hayishuv. How many Jews, young Jews, soldiers fought for the sake of the flag of Medinat Yisrael? They died, literally died, draped in the flag. They dried, their tanks had flags on them. They were wearing flags. Okay, so could everybody see the, I'm hearing the planes again outside. So we see that the flag now attains Kedusha, just like the clothing of a Jewish martyr. Okay, this is the position of Rav Soloveitchik. Okay, now here we have, this is a little bit of a joke. We have Rabbi Chameini also. They seem to have tremendous, they love the Jew with the Israeli flag. Notice this. They're marching along with the Israeli flags in their parades here. It is an interesting fact that the Iranians, you know, who are the greatest, who produces the most Israeli flags in the world? So clearly, first of all, Medinat Yisrael. But it happens to be that the second probably largest producers of Israeli flags are the Iranians. And here we have an interesting picture where the Iranians recognize the Kiddusha of the Israeli flag. They refuse to put their shoes on it, even though they normally do. They use it as a rug, as a mat. But here we see that they understand the inherent Kiddusha of the Israeli flag. And there's an article here in BBC. Business is booming at Iran's largest flag factory, which makes Israeli flags and American flags. This is the epitome of being enemy-centered. And please God, they will continue, as we see in this picture, will continue to recognize the inherent kedusha of the Israeli flag, as we do. But we move on to Rav Moshe Feinstein. Now, Rav Moshe Feinstein takes a slightly different position than Rav Soloveitchik and Rav Cook. And he actually pens a teshuvah, Nigrot Moshe, which when you hear about it, it actually, it's very discordant. It's very hard to believe that Rav Moshe Feinstein actually said something like this. And we're going to talk about whether Rav Moshe reneged on what he said here. But Rav Moshe was, great posek in America, 20th century. And he's asked whether it's okay to put a flag up, an American and Israeli flag, in the Beit Knesset. And can you daven in such a Beit Knesset? And he actually has very strong words here. Okay, he doesn't think there's an outright prohibition to daven in a place with a flag. There's no need for them to be there. They're secular objects. There's no religious value to them. But then he goes a little further. Even more so that this semel of Medinat Yisrael was created by Rishaim, by wicked people. This is very strong language that Rav Feinstein uses. He doesn't suggest that you have to take it out or cause machloket about it, but he, again, look how he, the way he associates it. Does he renege on this? So Rav Ari Shvat, who we spoke about before, and he writes, the modern approach to Jewish law does give some status to the Israeli flag, despite Rabbi Feinstein's ruling. Rabbi Feinstein's rulings gravitated more and more towards Zionism. As the year went on, he noted eventually including positive rulings on female IDF soldiers using guns in times of need, using both U.S. and Israeli flags in yeshiva high school setting. Whether or not the 6 day were invalidated mourning rituals over the loss of Jerusalem, and whether or not to say Hallel on the Independence Day. One of Feinstein's grandchildren also stated that the rabbi had expressed privately regret over his previous attitude towards the Israeli flag. Okay, so this is something that Rav Ari Shvat tells us. So here we see the range of views on this: Rav Soloveitchik, Rav Cook, Rav Moshe Feinstein, and now we move on to what's interesting. Some interesting features here. This is Panovich Yeshiva, only 20 kilometers from here, 15 kilometers in Bnei Brak, and you'll notice that they are flying an Israeli flag. I haven't checked this out for myself, but from what I understand, the Panovich Yeshiva, which is not a Tzioni Yeshiva, to this day, they still fly the Israeli flag over Panovich every Yom HaTzmaut, because the founder of Kahaneman was a big, was supported, I don't know if he was a big Zionist, but he supported Medinat Yisrael in some capacity, and felt tremendous hakarat tov for the Medinat. And so he, to this day, they have the Israeli flag flying over Panovich Yeshiva. But now I want to move to a discussion about the meaning of this talit and the symbolism of the flag as we know it today. Now, this is a picture of Rav Eliezer Melamed. He's a great posek today in the Dati Lami community. And he writes in his work, Pinnei Halacha, and he writes about the importance of the talit in general and the tzitzit. And he writes very beautifully that every nation has their clothing. Every culture has their special special clothing. And he says, "Lekol agam lekol am yeshno ezo beged umi ham yachado mishar haomot." Okay, ha Mexicanim lemashal bit batlu im kova has sombrero. The Mexicans have a sombrero. Ha Aravim itzatim bekafe kafia. The Arabs have a kafia. Leholandim yesh kafkave eitz. Veli Japanim kimono. Okay, so all the different nations have their own national clothing. And we says beged halumi shelanu hu atalit balat arba knafot vehatzitzit. Our national symbol is the tzitzit, the four-cornered tzitzit. He says it's not the kippah. The kippah is just a minhag, but the tzitzit, which are a mitzvah, a Torah command, this is our great symbol, our great national symbol. But let's move on and dig a little bit deeper. If you look at the Koren Yom Atzmut Machzor. It's a beautiful machzor. The commentary was written by Rav Moshe Targin, who many of us know. I have a picture here of Yitzchak Meir using the Koran machzor. If he uses it, such a popular singer today, we should all use it as well. And he has a beautiful piece here about the connection between tzitzit and redemption. Though the primary symbolism of tzitzit evokes awareness of mitzvot in general, several features conjure redemptive images. The Torah describes the four corners of tzitzit suitable clothing with the word kanaf. The same phrase appears in a messianic prophecy delivered by Zechariah about universal recognition of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the messianic era. The concluding verses of the eighth chapter of the book portray worldwide pilgrimages to Yerushalayim to discover the word of God. The final verse depicts throngs of people grasping on the clothing of Jewish people, adhering to them upon acknowledging us as God's chosen. So said the Lord of hosts. What a beautiful nevuah in Sefer Zechariah. In those days it shall come to pass that 10 men shall take hold out of all the languages of the nation, shall even take hold of the skirt of him that is a Jew, saying, we will go with you, for we have heard that God is with you. The nations will pull at our tzitzit. They want to come with us and follow us to the Beit HaMikdash, to Yerushalayim. Not only will the city of Yerushalayim serve as a magnet for those thirsting for divine instruction, but Jews as well will be actively pursued and associated with. The image of 10 people clutching the clothing of a single Jew indicates a degree of desperation of those pursuing the word of God, but perhaps unable to identify it on their own. Wearing tzitzit, clothing so clearly defined as Jewish, accentuates this messianic role of extended the divine word to all of humanity. So the tzitzit are a universal symbol. Okay, they're a universal symbol, and that's why it's so beautiful that we have tzitzit on our Degel Yisrael. And it goes one step further. Finally, the recent rediscovery of Tehillat. You know, we did not have Tehillat for over 2,000 years, but we've refound it. And many of us wear it. Many of us have visited the Tehillat factory. So the tzitzit, the blue dye associated with tzitzit, has profoundly enhanced the performance of this mitzvah and contributed to the redemptive process. The Chafetz Chaim, who authored a well-known article about the redemptive era entitled Ikvita de Mashiach, The Footprints of the Messiah, wrote that the Jews who witness the end of history will be particularly committed to the mitzvah of tzitzit. I want to say this to all of our fathers and sabim, everybody on this shiur right now. It is so important for us to wear tzitzit, for our children to see us wearing tzitzit, to teach our kids, once they're potty trained, to wear tzitzit, to buy them a beautiful pair of tzitzit. You could get them in the supermarket. You can get them in Masora. You can get them in any Jewish store. You could buy tzitzit for your young children. Let them wear tzitzit with pride. Our ability to fulfill the tzitzit in its original enhanced form indicates our progression towards the close of history. So here we see again the meaning of tzitzit and tzitzit, which appear on our Degel Yisrael. Now, it's an interesting question historically. Where did the notion of pasim, you know, when people wear on our talitot, we have these like black and blue stripes. Where are those coming from? So the Primigadim is quoted as he's a commentary on the Shulchan Aruch. He tells us that this is a zecher letchelet. This is, we remember the Tehillat, which he didn't have when he composed this work. So because we didn't have Tehillat, so we put a stripe on it. Now it makes sense why the stripe would be blue. Why is there a black stripe for many people's talitot? And the answer is because if you look in the Rambam, for example, he says that Tehillat is like, it's a color that's close to black. You know, when it looks black, it looks almost shachor in its color. So this is perhaps one explanation why we have the stripe. Another explanation of Adin Steinsaltz, and as we'll see, Professor Danielle Sperber, they write that, you know, let's go to Sperber already. Professor Sperber actually has a sefer. Professor Rabbi Sperber has a book called, a set called Minhagei Yisrael. We have it in the Beit Knesset. I also have it at home. And he studies the origin, the history of different minhagim. And he writes in Minhagei Yisrael, Makor ha-pasa tzivoni hu betoga shel ha-sentorim. This is fascinating. The pas, the strip, he says, comes from the toga. Okay, our talit, think about it, is actually connected to the toga of the senators, the latis kavus baroma in Rome. Afa yudim ayu ma'atim bigdehem bepasim eile. The Jewish people would wear their own toga, but with a special pas, with a stripe. Kefish yadu lano mimotzei ma'arot midbar yudah mefarsiko beveit ha-knesset bedura arafus. This is, you know, at least was the custom for Jews in Rome at the time, מותר להניח שנוהג ללכת בבגד שעליו שני פסים היה מקובל בקרב באוכלוסייה היהודית שחיה ברומא באותה עת. The Jews walked with two stripes, ואף בקרב אוכלוסייה היהודית שחיה בארץ ישראל, even in ארץ ישראל, שהייתה תחת שלטון הרומא ואחר כך תחת שלטון ביזנטין. הקרבה לשלטון השפיעה אף על סגנון הלבוש, מכאן לדעת ספרבר, מקור הפסים שעל הטלית. Sperber claimed that this comes from the Roman way of dressing. Maybe we had different color stripes, a blue stripe because of the tchelet. But this is this is according to Sperber. Okay. Now we also know that the tchelet, the blue of the tchelet, is also connected as a very sort of mystical, spiritual meaning. So in Menachot Daf Mem Gimel, we have a comment, the famous comment of Rabbi Meir. Why do we have tchelet on our tzitzit? Manishtana tchelet mikol minei tzivonim. What's the difference between tchelet and all other colors? What's the answer? Mipnei shatchelet dumel hayam. The tchelet is like the sea. The yam dumel rakia, and the sea is like the color, reminds us of the colors of the sky. The rakia lekisei hakavod, and the rakia, the firmament reminds us of the seat of God in heaven, kiviyachol, shenemar, as it says, and we bring a pasuk here. What's the meaning here? The meaning of the tchelet is that it is supposed to, it's a supernal, heavenly color. It reminds us, when we look at the tchelet, we also look at the vastness of the ocean. It leads us to look at the vastness of the sky. Today you could see some blue sky, some clouds, but also the blue sky here. And I want to share with you, I told you this was going to be an interactive presentation. I want to share with you, can everybody hear the song right now? I'm going to, 1 second, let me just...
By Yosef Karduner, in which we have the sound, this pasuk of Rabbi Meir. Let's listen. Can everybody hear?
No, we can't hear it.
Oh. 1 second, let me.
You have to share computer sound in the control panel.
Oh, how do I do that? 1 second. How do I do that on Zoom? How do I share? How do I share computer sound? Anybody know?
I don't have the host's menu has it somewhere.
1 second, test. Yeah, audios. No. Okay, I'm gonna play with it and I'll do my best. Give me 1 second.
Rab Eitan, I think it's when you shared the screen. Unshare it. Unshare the screen, and then when you're sharing the screen, there's an option to use the internal sound or something. Just try it.
Switch to phone. No. Can you hear now?
No, I think it's on the top of the screen.
Okay, what? Yeah, okay. Okay, 1 second. I'm just going to play it on my phone, and then you'll be able to, then you should be able to hear it. It's just a nice little song about this topic. Okay.
Put the phone next to your headset, Mike?
Yeah. Okay. Can everybody hear now? It's a song by Yosef Karduner. Tchelet domelayam. Moving forward in the song because we have to finish up soon. Okay. Okay, so that's a just nice little song connected to this topic. Now, we're going to finish up in just very quickly with another few quick slides, and then there's going to be a women's Hallel. So we get now to the history of what about the Magen David Adom. So it's interesting. So Gershom Shalom, can everybody hear me? Okay, the Magen David Adom. Doesn't really come from a Jewish source. Back in Eastern Europe, in Prague, somehow it becomes associated with the Jewish community, but it's not necessarily a religious symbol. It's actually more of a Jewish symbol of Jewish identity sorts. Okay, can everybody hear me? Just thumbs up if you can hear me. Good. Okay. So here we go. Historical 1354 is the first time that we know of the Jewish star, but it's also interesting because the Magen David is also associated with this assimilation. There's an article written by the professor of Kabbalah, Gershom Shalom. He writes, according to Shalom, the motive for the widespread use of the Star of David was a wish to imitate Christianity. During the emancipation, Jews needed a symbol of Judaism parallel to the cross, universal symbol of Christianity. In particular, they wanted something to adorn the walls of the modern Jewish house of worship that would be symbolic like the cross. This is why the Star of David became prominent in the 19th century, why it was later used on ritual objects in synagogues and eventually reached Poland and Russia. So, and this is also why he says that Zionists like this, because for Zionism, they didn't want a particularly strongly religious symbol, they wanted just a Jewish symbol. But then what's interesting is that, so here let's see what Shalom writes. This is in a book called The Messianic Idea in Judaism. Then came the Zionists. Their endeavors were directed not only to the reestablishment of the old glory, but even more to the transformation, renewal of the people. The very first issue of the movement's periodical, Die Welt, which appeared in June 1897, published by Theodor Herzl, bore the emblem on its masthead. When the Zionists chose it as their insignia as a Basel Congress, it possessed two qualities which had recommended to men in search of a new symbol. In the first place, it was known to everyone because of its general dissemination through the centuries, its appearance on every new synagogue, on the seals of communities, the philanthropic societies, alike. Secondly, in contemporary consciousness, it lacked any clear connection with religious conceptions and associations. But then it takes on new significance during the Holocaust. Because in the Holocaust, the Jewish star, the Star of David, becomes a sign of our oppression, a sign of our persecution, and of our annihilation, unfortunately. And he writes very beautifully at the end of the article, and this really captures the moment, for me at least, for Yom Ha'atzmaut. But far more than the Zionists have done to provide the Shield of David with the sanctity of genuine symbol has been done by those who made it for millions into a mark of shame and degradation. The yellow Jewish star is a sign of exclusion and ultimately of annihilation, has accompanied the Jews on their path of humiliation and horror, of battle and heroic resistance. Under the sign, they were murdered. Under the sign, they came to Israel. If there is a fertile soil of historical experience from which symbols draw their meaning, it would seem to be given here. Some have been of the opinion that the sign which marked the way to annihilation in the gas chamber should be replaced by a sign of life. But it is possible to think quite the opposite. The sign, which in our own days has been sanctified by suffering and dread, has become worthy of illuminating the path to life and reconstruction. Before ascending, the path led down into the abyss. There, the symbol received its ultimate humiliation, and there it won its greatness. So through the Holocaust, we recognize the Gvura, the Jewish people, and it's from there that we rebuild up through Medinat Yisrael. And so the Star of David takes on a new sanctification from the Holocaust, and also then as it emerged as the official star of the flag of Medinat Yisrael. So this is a little bit of a history, the curious history of the Star of David, the connection to tzitzit, the talit, so many different Jewish symbols and history here. And it really teaches us how beautiful our flag is, how much holiness it possesses, how important it is for us to thank HaKadosh Baruch Hu on this day on Yom HaTzma'ut. Thank you everyone for participating. We are now going to continue. For the women, ladies, you're welcome to stay on for Hallel, led by Etta. Sonia will also be giving a Dvar Torah at the end. So we'll take 1 minute for everybody for the men to get off, and for the women to, please stay on and participate. And we'll be starting in 1 minute. I'm just going to write into the group, to the chat. Okay. Okay, good. So we're going to start in 1 minute. Okay, Yishar Koach. Chag Sameach, everybody.
Chag Sameach, Yishar Koach.